For February the 15th, 2019, we talk about Sunless Skies, Astroneer, and we ask you about your favorite game manuals. Welcome to Level 274. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Jella Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back. I'm trying to think of something to highlight at the start of this episode, but I got nothing. We record this show on Monday evenings. Monday afternoons are when we record Watch Out for Fireballs. Sometimes that is, you know, two-hour recording session, something like that. Today was the day we recorded an episode about BioShock Infinite. We're not kind to it, David. Sorry. we've got problems. And that's gonna, it was about a five hour recording session.
Oh my gosh.
Do you have problems or does it have problems?
I think
that's up for debate.
Yeah. I'm trying to be kind because I know that David enjoys the game, but I don't want to start the. I don't want to stand here and say a thing that he likes is.
I was going to say you don't want to Stanley Parable it.
I mean, kind of. You know, it's I'm going to turn the other cheek on this one. It's fine. No. So like, we recorded that, and then now I'm here. So like,
yay.
You're
a little buzz, little buzzkill.
Yeah, I'm a little bit, I'm a little bit punchy. I'm punchy, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rock'em sock'em, Cole. That doesn't really have a ring to it, you know.
No, rock'em sock'em Rossbots. Yeah.
I do want to jump in and say that I also like that game a whole bunch too.
Oh. Ooh,
there's two people crossing.
It's going to be a fight up here.
We don't need.
I didn't even play it, so I only played the first BioShock. you can see the stream of that on my YouTube. People had a lot of fun watching me play that.
Yeah. Well, we don't need to fight about it, and you know, I'm not going to stand here and say that I really love that game. But we also don't need to fight about it. It's fine. Yeah.
I'll save it for the comment.
However, Cole, you are totally like ready to do battle with everybody about Greta and how cute she is versus everybody else's pets, and you're like, no, my pet is cuter. Oh no, you didn't just do this thing.
That was my ploy to get people to send me pictures of their animals.
No,
but also she's a perfect angel and nothing can beat her.
See, I feel like you just need to cut out the middleman, you know. At our work Slack, we just have a channel that's like daily pet picks.
So daily pet picks are good. What I want, like my gambit with that was to say my cat's the best, boom, and then for people to go through and look for the best examples of why their pet's the best, and then that way I get to see what they bring, you know.
See, I'm just imagining like the pet equivalent of hot or not. It's like good boy or not.
Well, that's a fallacy because the button for bad boy, it doesn't even go anywhere. It's just a JPEG.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I've just been in this. So I very rarely lead the what's going on. I went to a film screening on Friday.
Oh, ooh. Cool.
Yeah. No.
The one with the Q&A, was this the Grist Point Blank?
Yeah, this was Grist Point Blank. John Cusack was in Toledo. They did a screening of Grist Point Blank, which is a good, fun movie, right?
Movie where a person gets murdered with a pen.
Yep. Nice pen, thanks. and also somebody gets murdered with the TV, which is pretty good. Yeah, no, it's a good movie. And, you know, John Cusack is an actor whose work I enjoy. I like him in 1408 and stuff like that. But what I didn't want to see was this ghastly interview and Q&A where the interviewer wasn't really asking good questions. And the audience questions were mostly therapy.
Oh boy.
Chris and I looked at each other and like, I want to just melt through the floor. We need to leave. So we got.
Did anyone offer their interpretations of the movie to John Cusack?
No, but it was a lot of like my dead husband really loved your movies. Can you thank him for me? or something.
Oh,
like,
oh boy.
It was rough stuff. Bad times, yo. So,
how did Cusack handle it?
He was a good sport, you know. But yeah, no, it's just you just can't be that embarrassed for somebody else, you know? It's not good. It's not good form, but it was a good time. It was fun, a fun thing for us to do, except for the Q&A part. Yeah, it's fun to see old movies on big screens, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So that's my thing. Ben, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I went out of town this weekend. I got to visit my old friend in Wichita Falls. It was one of my friends from grad school. Hmm. And I stopped by Denton, Texas and saw my cousin. And then I came home. So it was a small little road trip.
Hmm. That is good. That's all over the place. Isn't Denton like way out west?
It's by Dallas, Fort Worth area. It's half an hour north.
You know why I think Denton's in West Texas? Because the Mountain Goat song, best ever death metal band out of Denton, is from an album called All Hail West Texas.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
So you learned your geography from what?
From the independent musical act called the Mountain Goats.
Okay.
I just never thought to look at a map where Denton was. Yeah. Oh, Jala, how are you?
I'm gearing up for a trainer training boot camp in Austin next week, followed directly thereafter by that 12-hour endurance event that I forgot that I signed up for. Like, it's like I get back that Friday night from being out of town, and then that Saturday morning I'm out and rucking for 12 hours. So, oops.
Uh-oh.
And then also in the news of other things that I'm doing for, like, basically no reason, I joined a belly dance Zills challenge from one of my dance instructors because I don't have time to go to class right now, but I still want to be involved with stuff. And she happened to be running this dance challenge, and it's just about playing the finger cymbals. Hmm. So you can also see videos on my feed now of me playing Zills. So this one video that I did of me zilling to a rock song, just like derping around playing with my Zills, trying to like remember how to play them because it's been a while since I last messed with them. That particular video has been getting a lot of attention, and people really seem to like it. So there's the video you can watch in your little headphones if you really want to watch me playing Zills on a cold day. And yeah, that's it. Like, that's basically it. Like, I'm zilling and I'm rucking every day now.
Hmm. Yeah.
So
you only do activities where the name of them is a fun sounding word. Because ruck is fun to say and zill is fun to say.
I suppose. But also it has to be in the form of a challenge.
Yeah.
An endurance event, a challenge, a boot camp, then you get my attention. If it doesn't have those things in it, then I don't pay attention to.
Yeah. Well, you know, anything could be framed as a challenge. I mean,
that's true.
That's how I do what I do, which is, you know, just nobody could stay in their house for that many days in a row.
Speaking of which, Grata, best
bet. Yep. Again, it's a challenge, right? Oh, man, I had no idea finger cymbals were called Zills.
They are called Zills, and if they are made out of wood, they are called castanets. So...
Oh, yeah, like from flamenco.
Yes, exactly. So I do not know the differences between how they are played. I imagine that there are some differences in the manner in which you use them. Mm-hmm. However, I play Zills.
Very cool. Wow. The if you go onto Wikipedia and look up and just look at the page for Zills, there's a painting of somebody who looks kind of like you. She's even wearing an orange dress.
Okay, links or it didn't happen.
I mean, very broadly, she is a woman with dark hair, and it's curly and long.
Yeah.
There we go. Gotcha. It's in there.
I'm like, those two men with the drums do not appear to be my person. Okay.
No. I am profoundly face blind. So
awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. David, how are you?
You know, bobbing and weaving.
New York sounds rough.
Running serpentine. Yeah.
Yeah. Today I learned when today I learned that, you know, when some people are, you know, here, you know, got guy killed with a pen, they don't think, well, what else would you do with it?
Paperless office, my friend. It opens up a lot of improvised murder opportunities. Yeah, because those pens
for John Cusack.
Those pens got to go somewhere. Why not throats?
Yeah, you know. Just kind of continuing on. I'm just being glad that I'm making it slowly through the winter without it actually snowing to any meaningful degree.
Oh yeah, you had those squalls, but that was just kind of threatening to snow, right?
Right.
People liked the photos of the snow squall that I posted.
It was very good. Oh man. Cool. I've gone through everybody. That means that we've achieved some banter, and so we can get on by doing the regular kind of show, you know, like the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and flipping a coin here. We're gonna get started with
random again.
There's two sides of the coin, and there's three. He has a two-sided
brief coin.
Yeah, well, but no, yeah. but
it's got two heads. On,
but the multiplayer
on either side.
The multiplayer always goes in the middle. So
one of these days, you will never. But like, I like to imagine that you would actually one of these days do it in a different order, just because I know that it used to be in a different order at some time a long time ago.
Gosh, with that routine, I would just melt. I would melt like Bowser at the end of the Super Mario Brothers movie.
This is the second time you've melted this episode.
Yeah,
Cole.
I know, right? It's a bad
thing.
You
melted through the four last time, and this time it's because of Bowser. Okay.
Yes.
Random.
We got a narrative going here.
Side note, looking up three-sided dice actually, results in some very interesting ideas.
Huh. Well, it wouldn't be a platonic solid though. So how would you actually make it so that each side has the same area?
So from what it looks like, a lot of them are curved so that like you kind of round off some of the extra sides so that it will always land on one or the other, but there's an equal chance of all of them.
Okay. Okay, yeah. It does like a little twisty kind of thing.
Yeah, also like basically triangles where the number is on the edge of the triangle, so there's 3 points and therefore three numbers.
Yeah, or you could just roll a d6 and then say 1 and 2 is 1, 2 and
yes.
3 out.
Thank you, Cole.
just like nature, gamers find a way.
Well, the gods of chance have deemed that we do the brief first, so why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Jala, your headline's jumping out at me, so what is Nintendo doing?
Well, I mentioned in a previous brief, like sometime last year, that the World Health Organization officially recognized gaming addiction as a mental health condition, and that was sometime last summer. Well, it's described as being a pattern of behavior that gives increasing priority to gaming over other interests and daily activities and things, where it keeps escalating even though there are negative consequences. So as a result of the World Health Organization's decision, Japan's Ministry of Health is currently conducting a survey on gaming disorder. About 1,500 people went to the National Hospital Organization Kurihama Medical and Addiction Center in Yokosuka each year due to internet addiction, but 90% of those people are video game addicts between the ages of 10 to 19. So Nintendo's president addressed this issue very briefly with investors during a Q&A, and basically he said that he is aware of the problem of gaming addiction, and that it is more about becoming overly dependent on games than it is about the games themselves being, you know, the main issue here. So Nintendo currently implements features that allow parents to control the amount of time that kids can play the games, and his statement was that in the future they will be trying to implement more features like that, and also trying to raise awareness that these features exist, so that they as a company can help face this issue by, you know, basically helping the parents be proactive in limiting how long these kids can be on their games.
Yeah. So, when they announced the Switch, they had these really adorable videos with Bowser and baby Bowser, young Bowser.
Yeah.
Kind of demonstrating those features. I'm surprised that that hasn't kept up, because that was a very good and natural campaign for letting people know that exists.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, I do have to say, though, like, they are pretty much, that I know of, like, the only gaming company that makes hardware that actually is trying to do stuff like that, you know?
And it's very funny, because when I think about the kind of games, or specifically the kind of, like, incentive structures that would cause this kind of behavior, Nintendo is the company that I least associate with that kind of degenerate play.
Yeah.
It's good that they're stepping up and being proactive and taking responsibility, but, like, you know, I think that that might just be a result of the fact that Nintendo is a synecdoche for video games as a whole. So when somebody in the general public thinks, wait, video games are bad, you mean Nintendo's are poison? Nintendo, answer this. Like, they're like, no, but there are, like, loot boxes over there. Check your phone bill. Your kids are bankrupting you. Like, no, well, Nintendo, make Mario go to sleep.
Well, and the thing is that now, like, with the Switch has turned into basically an indie machine for me. Like, I can play, you know, big tier games, but I can also play, like, all of these random things. And you can play Fortnite on there. You can get your loot boxes on the Switch.
Yeah,
so,
you're
I mean,
right.
Like, that's a thing. You can get it on their hardware.
Curse my stereotypical thinking.
So, I have to say, I realize this is totally off topic, but at least my hot take on this is less with Nintendo and more that it is deeply weird to read about a government that listens to scientists and cares about the health of its citizens.
Kind of feels like it's from fiction, right?
Yeah, like
what
like,
utopia
I,
is
I
this?
I mean, sort of
Japan.
Being snarky, but truly, it is like my immediate thought was like, that seems really weird.
Somebody listened to the WHO, huh? Wow.
So there. That's my groundbreaking news.
Yeah, good for Nintendo. It's you know, it pays to at least pay lip service to that. Oh man.
Well, I have to say, though, like, as much as I haven't had a Nintendo system other than like a portable one until the Switch, really, in like more recent times, I'm just glad that Nintendo as a company is still in the gaming market. You know, it has a good presence and has a good, you know, like there are aspects of it that I, you know, people are pissed about, but, you know, generally speaking, I am glad that it's there. Yeah. So
I just wish they'd get out of the console market.
I like my Switch.
But they did. The Switch isn't a console. It's a handheld.
Right.
Handhelds is just another term for console.
Well, I mean, it's not plugged into a bigger thing. Most of the time.
Does.
My definition of console is anything you can make exclusive.
Okay, yeah. Oh... Yeah, Ben.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, I don't know where we're gonna get rid of that. Ben, what's going on with Frostpunk?
Yeah, I just got a tiny story. Frostpunk added a photo mode to it so that you can kind of look into some of the detail of like the town that you're actually building. So I think I talked about this game a couple weeks ago.
Last week,
One of the mechanics of it, dystopian game, you're building around a generator to keep your citizens warm while the world is becoming colder and colder, and it's dystopian or whatever. One of the things about this is normally the camera is like is centered and you can kind of spin around your city, but you can't really get into the details of like the streets or anything like that or in between buildings. And so this just allows you to do that, and you can kind of see some of the art that you might not be able to appreciate. But yeah, this just came out with it's going to come out with a patch, I think, on the 13th. So it's coming out in 2 days, I guess. But there's already some YouTube videos of people using it. So perhaps it's demo videos or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it looks cool, though. It's just a small little add-on in case you already have that game.
Yeah. And they're releasing a Mac version of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So does this have any gameplay characteristics? I read some things that kind of suggested that maybe there was some, like, you know, the layout of roads you could actually mattered to, like, how much congestion you got when people were trying to get stuff done and stuff.
It might. I have, up to this point, I have not looked, like, that detailed into whether or not, like, citizens are running into one another. Because, mm-hmm. Like, all that stuff's pretty much automated for you. Like, usually what you do is you click on a building and you, like, add people to it. And then it'll grab from, like, the pool of people that you have. And they'll, like, manage themselves, essentially. Yeah. So, like, it's a mechanic that doesn't really come up. Like, there's nothing in the game that, like, will be like, hey, your people are walking inefficiently or anything like that. So, yeah. For the most part, it just manages itself.
Yeah.
This does allow you to look in and see more detailed or see, like, where your people are walking, I guess.
Yeah, I'm excited about that because it's a pretty game, and I'm about ready to start playing it for WoW. And I will be happy to be able to take pictures of my town.
Mm-hmm. Try and find something happy.
Yeah, I know, right? It's probably out there. It's probably out there. Oh, David, what kind of crossovers is Capcom cooking up?
Yeah, so Capcom has released a crossover between Monster Hunter World and The Witcher 3, where you can apparently join, I can never pronounce his name.
Geralt.
Join the dude in hunting monsters, which is basically The Witcher 3.
Yeah. It's a natural fit.
Yeah. But more importantly, you can dress your Pelico up like a Necker.
Oh man, that's great. Oh, just running around looking all rotten and stuff. That's awesome. Capcom doing this? Because, you know, Monster Hunter World, big title. It's, you know, really kind of a big flagship in one of the ways, you know, just, it is a flagship in one of the many ways that Capcom is kind of fucking killing it right now. But, like, mm-hmm. they're working with CD Projekt Red to get Geralt in here. They had the crossover events about Final Fantasy 14. They had the Assassin's Creed one. Like, that. Like, how are they working with these different publishers and saying, shit, man, just throw your IP into our game?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know they've also done, Horizon Zero Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess they own Devil May Cry, but I know they've done DMC and Street Fighter. So, yeah, I have no idea. I'm kind of pleased that, you know, as much as I literally just got done complaining about exclusives, you know, at least sometimes people mm-hmm. are willing to, you know, play ball.
Yeah, it has to be mutually beneficial. This must make somebody who plays Monster Hunter really interested in Geralt, maybe. I don't know. But it's a good fit. Like, Horizon's a good fit for this. Witcher is a good fit. Final Fantasy 14 with the big monsters and stuff.
Yeah, I would say also, like, most of these games are, you know, actually good games.
Yeah.
I can't really comment on Street Fighter, but other than that, you know, all the others of them, you know, I have either played or have on good authority that they are worth playing.
Yeah. Just killing it, even a year after release. Good deal. Yep. Speaking of Capcom, this is another patented Cole Ross something happened story, but it's also a bit of a PSA. So in the past, I have talked about if you've bought anything from Humble, you need to go and check your library because you also got a bunch of soundtracks. And, you know, you would take those soundtracks and then put them onto your zip disc, slap that into your jazz drive and carry it around with you and, you know, listen to it. However, kind of a corollary to that, if you like listening to video game music, is that Spotify is a really, really good source of video game music, specifically indie video game tracks. Okay. So, like, you know, I'll put on my Echoes throughout the house, listening to, like, the Hyperlight Drifter soundtrack as I'm cleaning, you know, doing good stuff like that. So That is something people need to know about. And that actually got a lot more doable because Capcom just announced and just put what appears to be 61 albums worth of their video game music onto Spotify, including songs from, I mean, just the ones that I'm excited about: Breath of Fire, Ace Attorney, Mega Man. But they also have Devil May Cry songs on there, Street Fighter, Monster Hunter. Basically, if it's a Capcom game, you can probably get that music and just listen to it, pop it into your library and go. So other publishers, please follow suit, because we need this. By
is
we,
this
I mean, well, what's that?
Is this podcast sponsored by Capcom now?
No, it just happened to be that they made two good decisions in short order.
Okay.
So two things.
Okay.
One, Devil May Cry has some really great music, so definitely check that out.
Uh-huh.
And also, I'm slightly disappointed that your Cleaning the House music is not from Dust Force.
No,
because
no.
That both has great music and would be thematically appropriate.
Yeah, no, I do like the Dust Force soundtrack quite a bit. Don't care for the game very much, but the music's good. Yeah. So if you're looking for that, it's under Capcom Sound Team. We are neither sponsored by Spotify nor Capcom, but this is good and cool.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask the listeners a question and then they answer it. Jella, what is the question that we ask the nice people?
We asked, what's your favorite video game manual? And thanks to Secret Agent Man for the question.
Yes, if that is his real name. I'll get us started here with Greg, who says, mine would be Tropico for the PC. It's very tongue-in-cheek, humorous, and funny all throughout. Also, it is well-written and helpful to understand this complicated Caribbean island sim game. My favorite part was that they used the classic bad English phrase from Zero Wing, all your base are belong to us. This was before that got beaten into the ground, of course, smiley face. Since I also want to give an answer to a game more people have played, I loved the manual to Legend of Zelda.
Yay!
Yep. I could imagine Tropico's manual being funny. That's a game people have played. People play or know about Tropico, right?
He just wasn't sure if anybody had played it,
personally have not.
But... Yeah. Well, I'll step out there and say, feel confident that people that other people have experienced Tropico. let's see, Ben, what does Steven say?
Steven says, Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past. Somehow I've managed to keep my original manual even after I lost track of the game.
Another good manual. Those Zelda manuals have amazing illustrations of the little dudes and what they're supposed to look like.
But don't.
Right. Yeah, but don't, because of pixels. Yeah.
Also, the game art looks like the box art doesn't look anything like the manual art. So.
Nope, yeah. Let's see, David, what does Mike say?
Mike says, one manual that I remember loving was for that other highly anticipated 1998 first-person shooter, Sin. It was in the style of John Blade's Diary, which had doodles and newspaper clippings throughout, providing background information about the story and characters. I went back and looked at it, and yep, it's about as 1990s video games as it gets. Trashy, sexist, etc.
Yeah.
That said, it did make for a fun read on the bus home from the store where I bought it.
Yeah.
I've got to say, when questioning, like, was this thing I remember super, super 90s? I feel like one could stop after realizing the main character is named John Blade.
Oh, yeah. It's the most 90s thing that ever existed. Like in a Grant Morrison kind of way. Like if you distilled a complex concept down to a single word that embodied it, yes, John Blade would be the 90s.
So was that the same as, I remember one of the early kind of Steam darling games was some sort of first person shooter. That was Sin something.
I don't know.
I just remember it being a first-person shooter that basically starred boobs.
Yeah.
Like literally the gun had a cutout on its stock so that it would not obstruct your view of boobs.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. I think you made that up. I don't think you made that up. I don't know. Yeah. Let's see. Jala, what does Devin say?
Devin says, Link's Awakening. Short, simple, but beautiful art and intriguing excerpts for each character and item.
Hmm. Yep. Continuing the trend. Ollie says, I really liked the Doom manual. I have a soft spot for manuals that list the enemies and weapons you can get in a game. Alien Trilogy on the PlayStation 1 did the same. Yep, Doom manual, Quake manual was really good for that. Yeah, no, it's a. I'm trying to think here. This kind of raised something. Actually, Mike raised something. Like, so I was about to ask, what do kids read on the way back from the store if manuals are no longer in video games? But then I realized, oh, the collected sum of human knowledge. Kids do not ever have to find a way to occupy themselves now.
Nope.
Okay. Well, shit. Ben, what does OMG Amoose say?
OMG Amoose says, not sure if it really counts as a quote-unquote manual, but it did come with a game, so I'd say the guide for Earthbound. Tons of info about the game, great drawings / clay figures, tons of extra side information, and of course, scratch and sniff cards. Really hard to give me to give more than that in a game. Mm-hmm. Also, comedy answer of Falcon 4.0. If you haven't seen it, just Google for an image of it, and you'll see why it's the comedy answer.
Falcon 4.0. Let's do manual. Let's do that. Let's see what this is. I think I'm just going to go to the image. Oh, huh. It's literally just like a planes manual, huh? What was that you shared, David?
That was the cover of Sin episode.
Oh shit! Yeah, no, that does have the boob cutaway. Huh? Yep. Yeah, that was Bungie, was it? No, Bungie was involved in one of the original ones. I could be wrong. Shit. let's see. David, what does Carson say?
Carson says, bit of a cheat, but almost all of the working design manuals for the PlayStation games, like Alundra, Ark the Lad collection, and the Lunar games, were so high quality and beautiful. Some were hardbound with a bookmark string and full color glossy pages.
I love yes. that. I love that Lunar manual.
My answer was Lunar 2's manual for just that reason.
I've got the Lunar 1 manual. It has like an interview with the localizers, kind of like talking about the choices that they made in updating it. Like, that was so good.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was great. There was a whole conversation in Slack where everybody was talking about, like, you know, the making of stuff and all the other goodies. Carson had added in pictures of, like, this is all the crap that was in the box, guys. You know, I've talked about that before, like, yeah, multiple times, but, like, he was talking about that, and then also, you know, what was good about the other manuals and whatnot, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, Jala, what does Jack say?
Jack says, I think I read Caesar 3's manual more than I played the game.
Yep, strategy games are like that.
Yeah.
You want to understand them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Similar to that, Casey says, the original Age of Empires manual was my favorite. It folded out into a ridiculously long sheet of paper with detailed artwork, full stat blocks for units, buildings, civilizations, and the tech tree. It is also impossible to find online, possibly due to the size. However, you can find a PDF of the Rise of Rome expansion, which is laid out in a similar format if you want a taste of how cool it was.
Mew.
Yeah. Similarly, I think I picked up, it was like a battle chest of the Age of Mythology games and all of their expansions. Those manuals were also really good, although I think they might have just been strategy guides if it was a battle chest, but for a similar reason, like, I loved reading about units.
Yeah. Units.
Yeah, units. Let's see. Ben, what does Adam say?
Adam says, Donkey Kong Country had a great manual. What I liked best was Cranky Kong on the tops and bottoms of some of the pages riffing. The manual saying things like, you're just reading this because you're bored.
Okay, that is pretty funny. Oh, man, Rare made me laugh. Shit. Oh, well. David, what does Nathan say?
Nathan says, what is a video game manual?
Ask your granddad?
Yeah. I've got a digital one that I'm going to mention. So there, yeah. It came with a game that I had from recent memory.
Jalo, what does Patrick say?
I don't know. I was very upset and I was looking at a manual. Sorry. okay. Patrick says, Ultima 6 had the manual or has the manual written in universe like it was a book given to you when you got to the world by Lord British. Your character in game is actually supposed to be you from the real world transported to Britannia. And it came with a cool cloth map and an orb of the moons.
Ah, you had me at orb.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Ultima manuals are good. Let's see. David says, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game, the one for the Amiga. The codes to play the game were in the back, so... So I guess it just gave you the cheats so you could break the game.
Yay!
That's very funny. And then Ben, round us out.
Yeah, Christopher says, my go-to will always be the neat spiral-bound Fallout and Fallout 2 manuals given to us by the almighty Vault-Tec.
That's kind of the big answer. Like, if that didn't show up, I would have brought it up just so it was not, like, it didn't leave just a void in the middle of the episode. Yeah, those are good. Mine's really easy, and this is, I don't know if it's an especially great manual, but it's one that I have a lot of nostalgia for. The manual for Final Fantasy II for the SNES, Final Fantasy IV. Just, I would rent that game over and over again. The manual came with it, and it was a big, thick manual that had screenshots of stuff from late in the game. Like, oh, I don't recognize these characters. And also, it was thick because it had a partial strategy guide in it. So, like, I could just read the entire game from the very beginning in Baron up through, like, when you get to the underworld, which was very fun, especially when you just had the game on a rental like that. Yeah, that's mine. Ben, what's your favorite manual?
I think I have, like, a cop-out answer. I think I'm just going to say, like, the Grand Theft Auto games where they include a map with the game. Oh, like, yeah. I always really liked those as a kid. Maybe also the Metal Gear Solid ones were also good, but I can't remember the jokes now after 10 years.
The Metal Gear Solid ones are good because they have, like, very beautifully illustrated comics that show the different moves that you can do. Like, the MGS3 one is notorious for that.
And they're very meta as well.
Yes.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Let's see here. David, how about you?
So I am again going to cheat and go with a couple. Okay. The manuals for Diablo 1 and 2 are amazing. I think we've mentioned in the past, but they basically, particularly in the case of Diablo 1, contain a huge amount of the storyline and, kind of background on the world. And it's especially interesting, considering how much of it, ultimately, actually shows up in Diablo 2.
Hmm.
Also, good with, but, you know, maybe a little bit of a cheating answer is Exapunks. Cheating because this is kind of Zachtronic Games thing, but it basically makes you print out zines. Yes.
Zills.
And use those to learn to program. And they also have, cooking recipes for, like, how to properly heat up dumpster diving donuts.
So, like, how do they make you print them up? Like, how was it required?
Well, so basically just they give you a PDF. They don't make you print them up, but it's something where it's very much like that's the only way you're learning. They, you know, there is no effort to teach you outside of that. So doing it with, you would almost have to either have it on another electronic device or print it out.
Yeah. Mm. Zachtronics did something similar with TIS 100, where the manual was just a manual for the fictional computer that you're trying to figure out how to use inside the game.
Nice. Hmm. So one other, the manual for the for Dark Souls 1, I think mainly was just kind of a booklet of like legal disclaimers, you know, stuff like that. But because of that, it ended up, you know, being about, you know, what, 5-10 pages that consisted entirely of prepare to die in different languages.
Oh man, just conjugated. I am preparing to die. I will prepare to die. You prepare to die. Yes. Very good. Anjala, round us out.
Well, I was going to say like Lunars originally, and then, you know, that was taken. So, okay, cool. I actually was trying to upload a copy of Contrasts. Contrasts manual, because it's basically laid out like a program to going to the theater because of the theater aspect of the game. And so it's like it starts on the cover with Compulsion presents Contrast, and then it has a synopsis and then the cast, both the video game characters with portraits and information, but then also the crew that worked behind, you know, that worked on the game, and has photos of each of them with information about each of them. And then it has behind the scenes information and like art from the game and everything, some information about how they were making the game and the concept, the music and stuff, different stuff like that throughout the entire manual. And it's really cool. And I was trying to get it to my Dropbox, but then like it finished, but then it just like disappeared. I don't even know. Like it did a thing, but anyway, it's really cool. And if I can get this up, I will definitely share it with you guys so you can see how cool it looks.
Neat.
So
did that just come with the Steam files or?
Yeah, it's in with the Steam files for that.
Nice.
So yeah.
I need to put in an honorable mention, which is that any manual is heightened by the addition of a notes section or a codes or password section in the back, just a couple of pages with some lines, especially if you got them on a rental and you could either
see. I found it.
Oh, you did?
Yes. Ah. Great. Cool.
Yeah. The link.
Cool.
Yeah. Here, no. Let me share. But you could get the,
oh, wait,
like
wait,
the,
wait, that's
like
the wrong thing. Okay.
You could get the Mega Man codes in the back of the manual with somebody already figured out, or somebody would just write butts in the back and that'd be pretty fun. Yeah.
There. Okay. So now you can see in the Dropbox what it looks like.
Oh, neat. Yeah. It is like a theater program. Oh, and it even has the team and crew in a crew section.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It has the people who made the game in there with photos and everything like that. So pretty neat, don't you think?
I like it. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you everybody for participating in this. Next week is going to be a free play because it's $2.75. If you would like to participate in that one or any of these, watch for the prompt to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Jala, for putting it up.
Woohoo!
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing over the past period of time or so. All of us were here last time. Shit. I'm just random. Ben, tell me what you've been playing.
I got two new ones. I'm excited about both. Picked up Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze for the Switch.
Oh, dang.
It's fun. It's an old game. It's already come out for the Wii U, right?
So yes,
it's been around the block, but it's a fun game. I was turned off of it the first like maybe hour or two I played it. I thought like I wasn't a big fan. I thought like you kind of died too easily at certain points, but after I got the hang of it, that's no longer a problem anymore. It's kind of like you're not really expected to get all the secrets the first time through a level. Like I think it's more about like you can either blast through the game and just go through and beat the game like in one run through if you want, or the cool thing that they do, and I think they do this like in a lot of like, they're starting to do this in, like the new Super Mario Brothers and stuff like that, where there's like secrets on each level that you're kind of encouraged to explore and find. And if you do that, you can like, you get like a completion or whatever for the level as you're passing through it. It doesn't really functionally give you anything. It's just there if you want to kind of maximize it.
They
also have the thing similar to like the new Super Mario Brothers, where some levels will have two different ways you can beat it. There's like a secret way to beat it and a regular way to beat it, and then that'll give you like a different path on the outer board game world that you're going through. So it's kind of a lot like, it's very similar to like the new Super Mario Brothers type game and how it's set up. But yeah, it's pretty fun. It's enjoyable. It's a good game to play if you're going on a road trip or if you're stuck somewhere or whatever.
Yeah.
The thing is, I generally
don't care for the Donkey Kong Country games very much. However, the thing that made me curious / excited about Tropical Freeze, it was, I forget who said this, maybe Daniel Riendo, some person that I like on Twitter or a podcast, said that Tropical Freeze is the best Sonic game in years. Just because it is like fast and you're doing a lot of zipping around and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. So one of the mechanics that's kind of interesting, you have two buttons. You have a roll button and you have a jump button. If you roll into a jump, there's kind of like a medium sized window that you can do this in. He will jump really far. Like he'll have really far, like horizontal jump if you do that. Like, And so they kind of encourage this, like in each level you can do a time attack mode where it's like try and beat this level in 30 seconds. And so it's kind of like encouraging you to race through and kind of play it as if it were like a Sonic type game. Mm-hmm. I've done that on a few levels, but I haven't, like right now I'm just trying to focus on doing all like the different hidden parts of it. I've on the third world, that's one thing that's really nice though, is the art style of the game is really cool. All the worlds are pretty fleshed out and have like pretty strong themes. So they do a lot to make it not just jungle / cave themed, you know. Mm-hmm. There's like good differentiation. There's also like cool like secret levels kind of on like the, like I was saying that some levels you can beat with like a secret path or whatever. They kind of hide like the cooler modes behind that. Like there's one mode, this is on the first world, one of the secret levels, it's a all black silhouettes of like Donkey Kong and Diddy Kong and other people. But like there, you can see like their tie is like red. So it kind of looks like a Sin City version of like Donkey Kong or something like that.
Okay.
But it's really cool looking. And they use that, they incorporate that with like the level design, and there's like secrets based on that, you know, like where you're in this kind of like 2D black and white world. So it's cool. It's a nice game. I think it's still like cost $60. I would not pay that much more. Probably I would probably wait until it goes on sale. Mm-hmm. It would be a fantastic $20 or $30 game in my opinion. But
I just wish that its title didn't make it sound like a Powerade flavor.
Next Taco Bell drink. And that's something that's like a little bit weak of a theme, like, because yeah, the idea, they have an opening cutscene about this, like the bad guy is this Arctic entity that you don't exactly see in the opening video, but he starts blowing like cold air towards the tropical island that Donkey Kong and all of his friends live on. But there's like not really a great integration of like all the bad guys are like penguins or whatever, but a lot of times you're not really given that reinforcement of like cold being bad or pervading throughout the island or anything like that. Maybe it'll be built up more as the game goes on, but art style's really cool, enemy design's cool, like all the stuff's fun.
Cool.
Okay. Anyway, other game that I've been playing is a game that just came out in its original release, or it's like 1.0 release last week, is a game called Astroneer. Have you guys heard of this game?
Like astronaut, but an engineer?
Yeah, Astroneer.
No, I've not heard of this.
So I heard about it. It was recommended by some friends who picked it up. It's a multiplayer game, so it's like but it doesn't have to be. You can play it single player. I've heard it described as 3D Minecraft. The premise of it is you are just like a little astronaut entity. You're dumped on a planet that's kind of procedurally generated, so it's kind of like a cute No Man's Sky. Mm-hmm. But then the idea is, I guess similar to like Minecraft or Subnautica or games like that, The premise is you go around the world that you're on, try and find resources, and then use that to build up the tech tree that exists there, which help you better mine resources. So what's cool about it is you have the art style. I don't know the correct way to describe it. It's like Assassin's Creed, how they have kind of like the lattice grid that's kind of like wavy around in a lot of the loading screens.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the world's made up of that, where it's almost like a sheet, but there's a lot of like individual points and everything's connected by triangles almost. So one of the mechanics of the game is you have this thing that's essentially like a vacuum cleaner where you can vacuum up parts of the earth and that will decrease. And then there's like resources under certain parts. So if you uncover a resource, it's like you'll vacuum it up. So maybe it's kind of like Luigi's Mansion. You could think of it that way.
Yeah.
And if you vacuum up enough resources, you get basically like chunks that you can use to build other things.
Yeah.
And then it's similar to games like Minecraft or Terraria in that you can like dig straight down into the earth if you want. One of the constraints of the game is like you need to be near an oxygen source. So the way they do this is there's tethers that you can build to your base where you drop them like every like 10 or 20 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And that like creates like a cord that's also like a lit cord. It's lit up like light blue to indicate that like you're near it so that you like you don't drain oxygen. If you go too far away from it, your meter starts draining. You can suffocate and die.
Mm-hmm.
And so the caving part's pretty fun because you're like building tunnels that are going downwards and you're dropping these like points of like for oxygen and trying to stay close to those. And then the aforementioned like vacuum cleaner tool or whatever, there's if you build a certain tech, there's a reverse to it where you can build you can make earth or whatever. You can like build ground upwards.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do things like make bridges if you like fall into holes and stuff like that. And then it's like a co-op game if you want it to be. So it's a lot of fun playing this with friends too, where it's like you and the other person go caving and looking for certain resources. There's also different like terrain like on the top of the world, like there's mountains and stuff like that, or there's like forests, and so you can kind of find specific resources if you go to those areas.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a really pretty game. I've had a lot of fun with it. It's what I'm going to be playing immediately after we're done recording tonight. So.
I really enjoy the visual style of it. It's super colorful.
Yeah, it's a very happy rendering and a very kind of like fun to play game and very cutesy game. But the mechanics are you know as deep as something like Minecraft or Terraria or something like that.
Are you stuck on one world or are you moving around to different planets with different biomes or?
So the way it works is when you play the game, you create a planet and you're playing on your planet. You can invite other people to your planet or you can go to like a friend's game on their planet. But by and large, you're confined to your planet. You can build launch pads with ships. So I think maybe eventually you can start going to other planets, but I have not done that yet. So I don't know how that works yet. So
nice.
Yeah.
Astroneer. I had not heard of this and now I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it's definitely fills a nice hole because I was looking for a good multiplayer game to play with friends instead of continuing to play Rocket League, which is fine.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
This is you know just kind of a notional question, but are you going to jump into Subnautica Below Zero or whatever that is?
I'm going to wait until that gets a release, but yeah, I have watched people play it a little bit and looked at it a little bit, but I don't want to spoil things for myself, so I'm trying to kind of stay away from it.
Okay. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze and Astroneer, are those yours?
That's all I got.
Cool. David, how about you?
Sure. So I actually also picked up something new. I grabbed Sunless Skies, which is kind of the new continuation in the Fallen London / Sunless OCs series.
I hear this game owns.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So basically, the overall plot line is that the game starts in 1905, where Queen Victoria has moved the entirety of the British Empire up to outer space, where she subsequently murdered the sun and replaced it with a clockwork version.
Cool.
So, yeah. So, I mean, you know, to give you a good idea of kind of the setting, this is, in fact, a setting where the sun can be murdered.
Yes. How does this jibe with the previous, you know, Sunless Sea, where the British Empire, or at least London, was put in an underground cavern?
Yeah, so it's not 100% clear to me, because, you know, I know at least Fallen London is still going on, so I'm not sure how it overall kind of works with the you know, kind of the split setting, but apparently from what I can tell, this is sort of a continuation of the plots. So in the previous games, Queen Victoria is kind of this extremely reclusive, you know, kind of sickly character, and is sort of you know, it's very clear something's not quite right with her. And she is now, you know, has made apparently some sort of probably questionable, you know, deals, and is now basically immortal and, you know, back to full health. So it's, on the other hand, I've only seen a little bit of it, but the Masters of the Bazaar, who were the people that basically were kind of these Cthulhoid figures that brought London originally to the center of the earth to begin with, and were sort of these enigmatic, you know, immortal, you know, masters, apparently now it's implied have lost their immortality.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's kind of hard for me to say, because to a certain degree, like, the entire game trades on just the fact that it basically throws you into a very highly developed, you know, and fleshed out world, but doesn't actually explain anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, almost... It's funny, because it's a very narrative heavy game, but the way that narrative's told creates an effect very similar to, like, the Soulsborne series, where it's, you know, more of a learning the world through osmosis.
I can get down. Yeah.
Yeah. So
what kind of game is it?
Yeah. So this time around, the gameplay itself has changed up a fair amount. It's more or less a trading simulator. So, you know, going between ports and selling or buying low and selling high while trying to survive bandits and monsters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of the core gameplay. This time around, they've really made your locomotive that you're using to navigate the stars much more agile than the ship you had in the previous games.
Yeah.
Most notably, it kind of steers using, you know, boosters on the side. And so you can use those to quickly dodge from side to side to avoid enemy fire.
Hmm.
So it's a game that feels much better than the predecessors, which were kind of slow moving.
Okay.
The other big gameplay change is it's both it and Sunless Sea were roguelikes. However, one of the kind of flaws in Sunless Sea was when you died, you tended to have a lot of grinding to get back to where you started off. And they've really de-emphasized this this time around. So you actually keep a lot of your resources, like the ship you had and the map, and you also start at the same level. And the way they justify that is that all of your characters, all of your captains are sort of forming a lineage.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to support that, when you level up, instead of directly setting, you know, certain stats to increase, you're basically presented with a series of background items you can incorporate into your character. So it can be things like, I grew up in, the aristocracy, or I spent time in jail, or I fought on this side of the war.
So or just a little bit like Reigns almost.
Maybe. I've not played that.
It sounds like Reigns.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And occasionally, those will actually directly, impact on the story. Mm-hmm. Although I've only seen that, once or twice so far.
Okay.
But yeah, overall very good. Very interesting, setting, I think some of the highlights so far is they've got a kind of their theme seems to be that the reason the Empire moved to space is the discovery that there's these vast mountains in floating in space that contain
also known as asteroids.
Right.
It's a technical term.
Yeah.
Containing crystallized time that can be used to basically allow someone to live forever or to reverse aging. That's also how they justify faster than light travel.
Right.
And so then a lot of the game, the theme kind of seems to be basically different ways that the characters and factions and organizations are dealing with mortality and kind of the inevitability of aging and death and things like that. Hmm. And so, there's some super disturbing things like one of the areas is that I've found is basically a finishing school for the children of the aristocracy, where the kids simply repeat the exact same perfect day over and over and over again.
Oh geez.
And so, theoretically, they never grow old, they never die, but they're also more or less prisoners.
Yeah, they're also not living.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Similarly, they've got debtor colonies where, time is adjusted to run, super fast so that, people can, spend an entire life sentence in the course of a couple of days.
Hmm.
Just all sorts of stuff. The last highlight I'd say is just like the previous games in this series, it's very conscious and progressive in terms of in particular gender and like sexual orientation, stuff like that.
That's good.
So currently my crew consists of a annoying great aunt, a good dog, a transsexual man, a non-gender binary person.
Yeah,
non-binary.
Yeah, non-binary.
Yeah. And I think a repentant devil.
so neat.
Yeah,
two good boys. It's
very much like you can do the thing. Similarly, the kind of that sort of the gender axis tends to be the most obvious, but it's also does very similar with race. One of my favorite just jokes from the previous game is you travel across across the continent to basically the what's in effect sort of this pseudo Mongol empire, mm-hmm. And are incensed that they consider you a foreigner.
What?
Is so there's just a lot of kind of satire of like
steampunk colonialism kind of stuff. Aspects. Yeah.
So yeah, so very good game. Highly recommend. It's unfortunately it's sort of a you have to play it to experience it, but it's definitely worth your time.
Cool. Yeah. No, just I saw that launched and I immediately thought, oh, David's going to be all over this.
Yep.
Yeah. Very cool. Is that everything you've played?
Yep, that's everything.
Sunless Skies. Jala, you're up.
Woo! Okay, so surprising nobody, I played more of Octopath Traveler, or perhaps that is a surprise, because I've actually been playing the same game for a while dedicatedly. I'm at about 64 hours in or so, and I'm still playing it consistently without dropping it.
Nice.
It's amazing. So anyway, all right, last time I talked about trying to get the advanced classes, the advanced secondary classes, of which there are four. So at the level I was at, apparently it's a dumb idea, according to various folks in the Slack, because basically it's hard at, you know, another 10 levels above what I'm at. So I'm like, oh, okay. So I backed off of that and just went into side quest land. So I finished all but one side quest that I'm not high enough level to complete yet, because I got to, it's a rescue mission, and I got through the area just fine, but then the boss is like eating my lunch. So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to come back to this later after I've done some other stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm working on trying to open up the remaining towns for the chapter 4 quests. So that way I can finish opening up that map. That way I can make a beeline from one to the next once I begin doing those quests. So I think I have two more towns left to go to. So not too much longer. And then I will be on those chapter 4 quests. Hmm. So another thing I wanted to talk about was that I was discussing my playstyle in the Slack, and I felt that I should bring it up on the show. Not that most of you guys know what I'm talking about, but like for those interested, because Phil and I play in a similar fashion, but Mai and Julia both play in a totally different way according to what the reactions were, although I have no idea what they do that's so different. So I have to comment that I love the Thief class. It's amazing because they're basically batteries. They steal hit points and spell points from enemies, and then they can also give spell points to your other party members to keep them charged up. And then in my case, Therion has the subclass of Apothecary, so he can also heal hit points as well.
Oh, okay.
So, he can charge everybody up. And they also deal damage, though, and they also have debuffs. So, you know, it's great. It's a great mix. And
so when you say thieves that steal hit points and give them to your teammates, I think the term you might be looking for is necromancer.
Yeah, vampires.
Yep. It's awesome. They're great. So, but they do it by stabbing. It's wonderful. They stab with their knife and then they take the hit points. Hmm. So anyway. I toggle between people and I keep everybody evenly leveled, but the team that I like to play with, if I have the option, is Therion as a thief apothecary, mm-hmm. Hanit as a hunter thief, and I like to have those two in the party at the same time because that's two batteries, you know, like that's great because they also do damage, and then with Hanit's hunter skills, you know, she burns up a lot of magic using her bow skills that attack everybody, but it's very useful. So
yeah,
and for people who are like banging on their steering wheel, I know I can give her the merchant class and get her spell point, you know, cost reduction or whatever. I haven't gotten there yet. I also have Cyrus as scholar cleric because he covers damage dealing and also heals as needed. And then Ulbrich as a warrior hunter. So that's like, I have two hunters, two thieves, basically. and then some other odds and ends in there. But anyway, that is how I like to play. There are other, like, plenty of other ways to play. Like, I could go through this game another time and then, you know, swap up who's got what skills and then have a completely different experience. I mean, yes, the storylines are still the same, mm-hmm. but the way that everything plays out and the manner in which you approach all the fights can completely, you know, be altered depending upon what your party makeup is. And that's a thing that Julia was like, you know, this is a, you know, telling feature of the versatility of this game, this, you know, capacity to be so flexible where you can play any number of ways and still be successful and get where you're going. Mm-hmm. So anyway, as I said, Therion and Honnett, for me, are damage-dealing batteries who keep Cyrus, Ulbrich, and themselves charged up. And, you know, every once in a while, I'll slip in some debuffs depending upon, you know, how the rest of the group is doing. Therion additionally has, like I said, the heals from the Apothecary class. And then Honnett has her bow and accuracy buffs that she uses that I will use from time to time depending upon the weaknesses of the people that I am fighting. Cyrus, of course, deals tons, like ridiculous amounts of elemental damage, but he can also heal, so that's great. And then Ulbrich just does physical damage all the time to everybody, and that's great.
He can't stop.
He just can't stop. That's all he does. And I might swap Honnett for Ophelia as a cleric scholar sometimes, just so I can use the cleric and scholar ultimate abilities both on Cyrus at the same time and buff his spells to the max. Because basically what those abilities do is that one of them makes any spells that attack all enemies only affect one enemy but then do more damage, and then the other one makes it a double cast. So like if he is using one of his skills, if Cyrus is using an elemental thing like a thunderstorm or whatever it's called that does, you know, two hits of thunder damage, all of that gets focused on the boss, for example. And it intensifies, even if there's nobody else on the screen, it still intensifies the skill. And then it double casts it, so he actually hits four times. So, you know, that's really fun to do.
Nice.
But, so anyway, I do that. I don't really use Alphen, Primrose, or Tressa much in that particular makeup, although Alphen as an apothecary warrior works pretty well as a secondary physical damage dealer. And depending upon the elemental, you know, the weaknesses and things like that of the people I'm fighting, I might tap Prim or Tressa in. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, I prefer to use the party makeup I talked about, and that one kills things just fine. I have not had any problems so far with the game.
How many characters can you have in your party at a given time, and can you swap them at will? Okay, four.
You cannot swap them at will. You can have four at a time in your party. So
gotta go to the bar if you want to swap them out.
Yeah, you have to go to the bar to swap them out, which is really great. But just for anybody keeping tabs, my people are all a minimum of level 46 at this point. The minimum level suggested for the Chapter 4 quest is 45. So by the time I actually finish going to the other two towns, my people will probably be higher level than that, like 47 or 48, by the time I start the Chapter 4 stuff. So I'm actually, at least according to their suggestions, I am adequately leveled to go into Chapter 4.
Okay.
So.
And Chapter 4 is the end.
Chapter 4 stuff happens, and then there's like end game after that.
Okay.
So I still have time basically to go through some of the Chapter 4 stuff and then go get the advanced classes, buff those up, and then go to the end game. Like I've got some time yet to you know, play through. So yeah,
cool.
That's it. That's what I played. Although I also want to make comments about Resident Evil 2. So I don't know if you want to like wait until you talk about,
or
if you want me to just talk about it.
Yeah, just
even
go
though
ahead.
I didn't play it.
go ahead, because that's really all I've been playing that I can share over the past week. That wasn't for another show. So let's go ahead and do that. I've said everything that I want to say about Resident Evil 2. However, this past weekend I streamed the Leon B scenario. Kind of finishing out the four different ways that you can play the main campaign of this. And people seemed to enjoy, like the viewership numbers were good and the chat was good and engaged. Ben, you were around too. And Jolly, you were there too. Jolly, you have thoughts.
I have thoughts. So, I will say that I really like Leon's personality development arc. You know, like, granted, I was, you know, doing other stuff, multitasking when I was watching, but I actually was around, like, able to pay attention more during Leon's than I was with Claire's. I just had a lot going on when I was doing, when I was watching Claire's, so that's why I didn't have a lot to say. Mm-hmm. But watching Leon's, though, I really like it. The development arc of his character, you can see where he goes from being completely naive and completely just, like, green to, you know, starting to become the character that you know from, you know, the later games in the series. So
it's tough, right? Because he has to start as a human, but still progress in such a way that he becomes whatever the fuck he is in four.
Yeah, whatever that is.
I think the technical term is gun ninja.
Maybe. With suplexes.
Cheese monkey is my suggestion for that. But anyway,
I would like to point out that never enough character development to actually get over Ada.
Right.
No, right. No, but she's, you know, she manipulates him.
Yeah, that too. So, but yeah, like, the chat was talking about how bad some of Leon's lines were, or talking about the line reads or things like that. So I want to put a pin in that because I want you to reply to that, Cole. But also, you know, they were mentioning your right hand comes off, that stupid line from four.
Yeah.
So anyway, okay. Cole, what are your thoughts about Leon's voice actor, the line reads, the lines, etc.?
I'm generally fine with them. I mean, it's not like any of it is high art. I think that the best performances are Annette and William, you know. I think it's tough for most of the Annette, William and Marvin. Marvin is kind of god tier, especially when you see the differences between the way that he acts around Leon and the way he acts around Claire. I think that is remarkable in its own way. I think both Leon and Claire kind of have some problems, but I'm really willing to kind of chalk a lot of that up to just these new characterizations where they are a little bit more like people. And if they sound unnatural or if they sound like they're forcing it, I don't know. Like I could believe that they are people who are in a very unnatural situation, who are having to force themselves to, you know, to basically act the way that they would expect to in an action movie like this, you know. And that is especially apparent, like, in the battle barks when you're fighting zombies, you know, or when you're, like, walking in hallways and you hear Leon, like, trying to psych himself up.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, I don't know, like Ada's talking to him like a femme fatale, and he is responding as though she's a femme fatale. Like, it's not that incongruous. So, like, not everything rises to the level of a Marvin, but that is fine to me because I like their characterization overall. None of it like takes me out of it in a huge way. So that's my thought.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, from the bits that I was hearing, you know, while multitasking, doing other stuff, like, I understand part of what they're talking about and things like that. And yeah, there are some problems with it. And I think, too, part of it is just, like, our expectations of, you know, if you're going to have voice in a game, especially a AAA game, it had better be damn good. Otherwise you don't need it in there, you know?
Like, yeah.
That's kind of like, the expectation at this juncture. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, the thing is that horror games in general, you know, the survival horror games don't always exactly have the best, you know, delivery of lines and acting and whatever anyway. So, like, part of it too, for me, is just the genre itself. I'm just like, you know, that's okay for this type of a game. I mean, like, granted, you know, they're not going to please everybody, you know? But, like, I was all right with it the way it was. But it was, like, a subject of debate, I think.
This is a collective phenomenon, so it's not necessarily to any particular person. When I was playing the scenarios on my own that one weekend, the voice acting just kind of felt, like, naturalistic and didn't feel, I mean, like, even worthy of comments. while I was doing it, but you know, during the stream, when I felt the need to comment on things, and especially when the audience in the chat was reacting, I think that maybe it was just that's what was happening, and so people latched onto it as a thing to talk about, which is fine. I'm not going to discourage chat or police people, but it's like sometimes the social need to comment forces commenting on stuff that otherwise wouldn't invoke that kind of scrutiny.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I do think needs to be commented on, and I'm totally going to comment on it, is the fact that you, first off, you had to call me out because you're like, Jala, there's an Ada death coming. So Cole was playing at one point as Ada, and she died in an incinerator, and it was real lame because they just added these flame sprites on top of her, and then she fell over. And it's like, that's it. But they go out of their way with all this other gore, so I don't know why they didn't just go ahead and put the skin blackening, blistering,
grease and gristle leaking out of the cracks in the skin, her eyes popping.
Yeah, like that absolutely horrifying. Like that, in a horror game, that's just horrifying. I mean, like, I understand, oh no, she's pretty. We don't want the pretty girl to be all, you know, fucked up looking. Okay. But at the same time,
apparently
horror game.
Never
also, it's
Tomb
Ada. right. So, well, we were channeling some of that. Like, there was a point where, there was injury to a female, there was like, oh boy, hurt female, fetish going on here.
Ada falls into a trash pile and gets some rebar through her thigh.
Yeah. And it's hey, it's Tomb Raider. So. Yep. Which is sad that, like, immediately that's what I think of now, thanks to that game having so much of that in it.
Yeah, it's real a lot.
But then too, the Birkin monster development is pretty great, scenes with Annette, although she and her husband really look like siblings. Like, I thought that before you said it, but then you said it, and I was like, it's not just me,
I tweeted that. They've got a real Kirk and Luann Van Houten kind of thing going on. Like, they both look exactly like each other, and they look exactly like Milhouse. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, no, I would not be surprised to find out that there is some cousin stuff going on.
Yeah, but like,
I wouldn't be happy about it, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Well, overall, Annette and all of that just seems like a more compelling character with, you know, more of a, I guess, a basis in this one than in the original.
Oh, so, absolutely. 100%.
Like, oh my God. I'm just like, wow, like, I actually, you know, have some. Not a lot, but like some empathy for her and things, you know, because of things going on in here. She seems way more real, you know, because she's not like a bit part so much as they're trying to make everybody more human in this game.
Yeah. So, the sketching, like the filling in they did with her, was super additive.
Yeah, for sure. So at the end of the game, though, they're pushing the whole Claire, Leon, and Sherry as a family thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I had said that the moment that Leon met Sherry in the train, and he's like, who's this? And Claire's like, this is Sherry. And I almost died laughing when Leon's like, okay. Yeah. He doesn't just say, you know, I'm glad someone else survived, or nice to meet you, Sherry. I'm Leon, or any of that. He's just like, okay. Good job, bro. He's just like, oh, so my girlfriend now has a kid too. So okay, at least we don't have to go through all of that 9 months of hell. You know, like, okay.
I am a fan of the awkward, like, meet cute acting between Leon and Claire. I think that is super endearing, actually. Both when they're talking through the gate before the helicopter explodes, and also at the end there, and that, like, that specifically, like, oh, that'd be the weirdest first date ever, wouldn't it? Like,
yeah, and like, and then they're all holding hands, and it's totally like, here's the brand new happy family, and everybody in the chat was just making me die laughing too at that point too, because they're like, hey, Sherry is just like not worried at all about her dyed horrifically parents that she just left behind in Raccoon City with her whole life. totally ripped away from her and all this other stuff. Like, she's totally fine. Yeah, she's got Leon Claire.
she's got a lifetime of nightmares in front of her. It's fine.
Yeah, and she's got new mom and daddy. Who cares? Yeah. You're like, okay. Because she's like, you guys, you can adopt me and we can get a puppy. Yeah, oh my
and a parrot.
God, you just child. Like, what?
To be fair, at least from what I've seen in Six, that seems like a fairly consistent characterization.
Hey, I like Sherry.
Yeah.
You hush.
Oh, I like Sherry a great deal, but I mean, she's still kind of weird.
She's eerily well adjusted, you know, especially considering her circumstances.
Well, then again, I guess if your parents have always been like that.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, well, at least that's over. Let's move onward to a slightly healthier life.
Yeah.
Slightly. Only slightly.
Only slightly. Yeah. Yeah.
But, so for the record, Ada is still annoying, but she actually does, as I thought, annoy me less because Leon is so damn derpy for a good portion of their interaction.
I was just playing him like a fiddle.
Yeah, like, he's just derpy as hell. So, you know, by the way, it's really funny to me. This has nothing to do with the game, but my mom has now started saying the word derpy.
Oh, yeah?
And it makes me happy. She did that, and then for my life, because I say that a lot as well.
Oh, yeah.
I need to do this for my life, and my mom say that.
Now. That is very funny.
So, anyway, yeah. At the end, though, of, like, the super dramatic arc of Leon and Ada, when they had this totally Batman Catwoman vibe going. But it's great because they actually managed to build legit tension, like they're having an actual fight, unlike prior Leon Ada encounters where they're on opposite sides, but they're kind of like, oh, well, darn.
Yeah.
You know, like, whatever.
Yeah. And he goes like way over the top, like, okay, I'm going to interrogate her. Like, oh, I thought I trust you, but I heard something really interesting, didn't I? Like, Leon is acting like he's been cast in a movie. It's great.
Yeah. But it's pretty great though, because, like, you know, she's hammy as hell, so he's just hamming it up too. And the thing is that the ham is just all Leon. Leon is a giant ham.
Yeah.
So, and he just continues to be a ham.
Yeah.
He just, you know, progresses through all of the games as such. So
I will say something in favor of Ada, specifically the acting in this portrayal of her, which is she starts out being the ace, right? And starts out like manipulating him. But as things go on, and especially as she gets injured, but more like when the stakes get real high and you can see the uncertainty in whether or not the act is going to hold and all of that, like, that is a testament to the animation and the delivery. Like, she is not on nearly as firm of footing in this portrayal as she is in literally every other portrayal. So that at least humanizes her while she is also, you know, still playing a cartoon character.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's probably also part of why this was more tolerable to me. Like, she still got the whole attitude going on, but she's, you know, less irritating to me, generally speaking. So I have now, if they like recast her throughout additional games in this kind of light, then she may become a tolerable character to me. But, you know, it depends on what game you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, you couldn't remake RE4 with these portrayals. It just wouldn't, it wouldn't work.
Uh-uh. So, oh, and also, of course she fell off. She had to go get the virus.
Yeah. No, it's fine. Leon, stop being upset. She has a grappling hook. She'll be fine.
Yes, she does. Yes, she does. She didn't use it until after she fell through the darkness. But you know, this is a horror game. Anything that falls into the darkness is going to come back, except for Deborah, the booby monster from Six, who did not come back. That is the only time that anybody has ever fallen into the darkness and not come back.
Yeah, she's still down there. She's just waiting for RE9, I think.
Right.
So, Ben, you were there watching. Do you have any thoughts or questions or observations?
I didn't stay along too long because I do want to play the game myself. So I saw some of the scenes or some of the cutscenes of like Leon and Ada, but yeah, I don't know. I watched it more the week before, and I really that's when I paid more attention to like the combat and kind of like walking around the police station, I think. And it just looks really good, so
It's a beautiful game.
Well, I do want to say, though, that some of those puzzles look really annoying.
Yeah, when you're trying to get the right amount of when you're trying to get the right amount of like chemical in one particular thing, or the the portable saves are fucking nightmares. Like those in particular are real egregious.
How often would you say those frustrating, irritating, stupid puzzles are?
There are like 3 portable saves in the game. And they're like that chemical puzzle is the most annoying of them, and that happens once.
Okay. So just for the record, for other people who are listening who did not watch your stream and have not played yet.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, those are bad, and I was happy to see that people in the chat also also thought that those are really, really gross and bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, definitely Resident Evil, to translate this, Resident Evil 2's remake looks like a game that I would binge play over a weekend, saying fuck it all to everything else, much like I have done in the past with my history, as uncovered during the prior multiplayer from last week.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what I have to say about that. I have not gotten it, and I'm going to be real busy, so I won't be getting it for a while, which is part of why I watched the stream.
Yeah.
So I will get to it at some point, and then you'll hear me talk about it all over again.
Yes. It is really good. It gets my highest recommendation. It's going to be very hard for something this year to top that for me.
Yeah.
So are you thinking a potential game of the year?
Possibly. I mean, the year RE7 came out, if that was not my favorite game of that year, it probably should have been. Yeah. So that's really all. Like everything else has been non-game stuff. So how do you all feel about buttoning it up?
I feel buttons.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level. You know the things that you can do. You can rate us or review us on iTunes. I don't know if I mentioned this, but we're on Spotify now. Since I talked so much sugar about Spotify earlier, might as well finish it up. Yep. So if that is how you listen to podcasts, or if that would make things easier for you, we are there along with most of the other duck feed stuff. But otherwise, Patreon, telling your friends, and of course coming back next week. What am I missing? Am I forgetting anything?
Prepare your questions for next week.
Yes, think about your questions for the free play that is going to be happening next week. Yes, thank you, Ben. Otherwise, I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I continue to be David Meinsmith in Manhattan.
I'm Jalachan in Places.
I am Ben Merkel in Austin.
That's weird.
For now.
Yeah. stick around for some titles. Okay, I only have one, and shamefully, it is one that I said, but it got a laugh. Why not throats? Yeah. So.
Thank you.
Okay, Jello.
Just a JPEG. Melt through the floor.
Okay.
Improvised murder opportunities. And just like nature, gamers find a way.
Okay. All right. Ben?
I got 3 Coles. I got zillionaire.
Oh, no.
I got.
Wasn't that said in between things? Like, I don't know if that was on the actual.
I can't remember if it was.
And then the other 2 I got is. Neither of them got a laugh, but I wrote them down because I liked them. One of them was, I like reading about units.
Yeah.
Like reading about what?
Units.
You know, like in RTS games, units.
And then one is, not everything rises to the level of a Marvin.
Okay. David, what you got?
So the only thing I got was, don't worry, she's got a grappling hook.
By the reaction they got on here, I'm doing some like applause-o-meter stuff. Improvised murder opportunities seem to get the one. Seemed like that's what seemed to tickle us most.
That seems not like good. The most usual level title-ish. It's yes. got the usual recipe.
Yeah. Does anybody want to make a case for one?
Nope, I don't have any strong feelings about anything else. I have no strong feelings at all.
Very strong title.
What's that?
I don't think one is a very strong title.
Yeah. Wait, what? One? What?
You said someone making an impassioned argument for one.
Okay. Yeah. I gotcha. Yeah. Let's do improvised murder opportunities. Let's play the classics.
Sure.
Okay. I'm gonna go and lay down. It's been a lengthy day.
I'm gonna work some more. Yeah, I'm and sorry, then I'm Jella. Gonna hopefully eat and maybe get some rest.
Oh, thank you for being on. Yes.
All right.
Someday. All right. Good night.
Take care, yes. Everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.
Peace.